Hi there, this is Angela Middleton and welcome to my podcast, I Want to Be A, where I interview high flyers from all industries to find out their journey, how they came to do what they do, what it's like to do their job, and then their advice for listeners wanting to follow in their footsteps. In this series, we cover everything from traditional careers such as accountancy through to the less traditional careers and future industries such as digital marketing and digital publishing. Today we have in the studio Matt Marsh. Matt is a professional photographer. Very interesting listening to Matt's story. Yet again, we have an example here of someone sort of starting something off as a hobby, but doing a variety of different careers in the meantime. And in Matt's case, you know, that involved everything from working as a lifeguard through to a steward, you know, on British Airways as well, until bringing his true passion to the forefront, which was photography, and ending up now sort of doing that full time. So Matt, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And if we could start with just hearing a bit about your time at school, really where you went to school and up until where you are now. So a bit of, you know, a chronological history.
Fab. Okay. So I was actually educated in Cape Town because I was living in Cape Town when I was a youngster. So Settlers High School is kind of what I remembered most. So that was my schooling. Very, very fortunate to be out there, to be fair.
And you went to a lovely school, didn't you? But it was pretty strict, you were saying.
It was very strict. It was on par kind of with like a private school in the UK, although in Cape Town back in those days they still had what we call corporal punishment. So very, very strict, you know, socks down at your ankles, you get caned.
Right.
So you had to be good.
And how academic were you?
I was middle of the range. And as I got older, the middle of the range started slipping further. So I wasn't very academic, to be fair.
And you mentioned to me that part of this was to do with a lack of self-confidence as well.
Yes.
So tell us a bit about that.
So all my school reports when I was younger, they all said the same thing: lack self-confidence. You know, everything else was spot on, but that was one thing that did come about on every school report. And that was largely to do with being overweight. At the time, I was the typical, you know, overweight, glasses and braces child that got bullied.
And it held you back, really, that lack of confidence?
It did, big time.
Until something changed.
Yes. So I became ill when I was about 13. I drank unpasteurized milk directly from a cow. I was milking a cow, and I thought, let's have a taste of this. It's not nice, but I was hospitalized for about a month, and I lost a terrific amount of weight because I had serious issues with my kidneys.
So on the face of it, that sounds bad, and it was indeed bad. But
yes.
What happened when you did come out of hospital?
So when I came out, obviously nobody recognised me. I was half the man I used to be. I can still remember their faces at school, actually. But it also spurred me on then to become more active, because already, you know, I felt a little bit more confident. I wasn't as overweight. So yeah, and that led me into sort of becoming a bit more active and getting involved in sports.
Yes, and which sports did you get involved in?
So the sport that that caught my eye was thanks to Baywatch.
Right.
So I actually...
Some people may not know what Baywatch is.
Right, so Baywatch is a television programme about lifeguards. So I got in contact with my local lifeguard Surf Life Saving Club, as they call it, and I enrolled myself into a surf life saving course to take an exam to become a lifeguard. It's a bit like working for the RNLI. It's all voluntary, but obviously, as you can imagine, in Cape Town the beaches get packed, and you know, the weather's great there, so they need lifeguards to patrol you know, every weekend to make sure everyone stays safe.
And so you went because of that, from being overweight and then becoming slim, but then not just slim, but actually you started to work on your physique, didn't you?
Absolutely. So obviously part of becoming a lifeguard is, you know, you have to be physically fit and able. So the first thing I had to work on was my running. My dad helped me with that because I couldn't even run to a lamppost without having an asthma attack. So we gradually built up the running, likewise with the swimming. So part of the exam was a 1K run and then a 1K swim and then a 1K run. That was part of the exam. So we built it up and I didn't pass the first exam because unfortunately I didn't touch a buoy out at sea. We physically had to touch it. I swam up to it, but I didn't touch it. But that didn't deter me because that's the only reason I failed the first exam. So I went straight back, did it again, and
And you, how old were you at this point?
So I was 14, 15 at the time.
And you were saying that you also had a job as well, because you weren't getting paid for this lifeguarding, so you needed to fund that, didn't you?
Yeah, so the lifeguarding was completely voluntary. Wouldn't change that for the world. I'd still give up my time now to lifeguard. It was absolutely fantastic, great life experience. But obviously, when I turned 16, I was able to get a little job, which helped me fund things like buying a decent bike to ride to the Surf Life Save Club, helped me fund things like a new canoe, for instance, things like that. So those extra luxuries in life, it just helped me fund. So the job was literally just working at my local spa, little supermarket, and basically stacking shelves to start with.
And just before we sort of move on to sort of the next part of your history, I just wanted to make a point that sometimes things that seem so bad can turn out to be so good. So, you know, the fact that you had this unfortunate incident where you drank this milk that sort of poisoned you and caused you all this damage, actually you came out of it, you know, and went in a very positive direction. Now, we certainly wouldn't advocate that, though, for other people.
No.
But what you did experience was the transformative effect mentally when you improved your health and, you know, you lost all this weight. So I'm sure there would be other people who would be listening to this who would sort of relate to the issues that you had there and the lack of confidence. And what would you say to them? How would they address it?
I'd say, do you know what? Take control. I'm the first person to eat if I feel down or if I feel sad. You know, I'm what I call an emotional eater. But take control of it. And the easiest way that I now take control of it is calorie counting. Even if it's, you know, you buy something, just look at the calories you're consuming. There's various apps out there if you want to record your calories, but just look at how many calories you're putting in to how many calories you're burning. And if you are overweight, obviously just reduce the amount of calories that are going in. Make sure you're in a deficit. Mm. You don't have to make massive changes. You know, I still have a spaghetti bolognese with my kids, but it's all about portion control, and it will 100% will improve your self-confidence.
Exactly. And I think that's what we're all about here is, you know, that part of sort of achieving in your career is you have to believe in yourself.
Absolutely.
And whatever it is that's holding you back, it's good to tackle it.
Yeah.
The other thing that happened to you during this sort of period of time, well, a couple of things. Firstly, you were very interested in aviation, you were explaining.
I was. When I was a youngster, I loved aircraft. I loved aviation, I think the common term is anorak. So my mum used to drop me off at the airport with a friend who likewise loved aviation, and we used to spend days at the airport photographing aeroplanes. We used to just document their registrations, etc. It was great fun.
And you also mentioned that you used to photograph aviation, so you got into photography very early on, and again that was sort of just a bit of an accident, really, wasn't it?
It was. Obviously, there was a point where obviously I'd beg, borrow and steal my mum's camera, but then I was about 15, I found out that I had a biological father, so technically I found out my dad wasn't my dad, but obviously he wanted to come to Cape Town to see me. He hadn't seen me sort of all my life, so he asked if I wanted anything, and miraculously I wanted a nice camera, so I was very fortunate to get this camera. And that obviously helped, you know, get me where I am today.
Yeah, amazing. Well, we can talk about that in a bit more detail. So armed with your camera and your love of aviation, you go back to the UK. Your parents decided to emigrate back to the UK.
They do. So I was 17, not far off turning 18, and my parents decided to emigrate back to the UK. So as I was feeling very settled, it was obviously a bit of a blow, but I knew it would be for the best because obviously, yeah, I you know, I had one determination in my life, and that was to be cabin crew.
Right.
So so obviously coming to the UK, I knew it would open up the door to quite a few airlines.
And cabin crew, for people that don't know, they are the stewards.
Steward and stewardesses,
on board aeroplanes.
Yeah, that's that's the new term we call cabin crew.
Yes. Okay, so you come back to the UK, you wanted to do that, and what happened then?
But I just wanted some form of income to start with. So literally the day after I got off the plane, I went and got myself a job at the local McDonald's, and I worked there for about a year. But in the meantime, obviously, I was sending my applications in to the airlines, and I finally managed to get an interview for British Midland on the ground, and I got a job with them on the ground.
You did that thinking, well, it's going to open the door for you to get up into the air.
Yeah, I thought, obviously, once you're in, it's easy to move around. But I can honestly say it was probably as challenging to move around as it was getting the job in the first place. The only positive I would say is, obviously, once you are in the door, you can get feedback from your interviews. So so obviously I took that opportunity and found out what my feedback was, so I could work on the areas that needed work.
So you were saying that you had about four attempts where you kept applying to go back, you know, to change departments and go up into the air, and, you know, when you got rejected, you got your feedback.
Yes.
And they said, sell yourself a bit more or be more confident.
Again, it came down to confidence and selling myself. Yeah. You know, there was a few questions I can look back now and think, yes, I didn't kind of give the correct answer. They are looking for certain buzzwords. They are looking for certain sort of scenarios. But ultimately, that does all point back to selling yourself.
A few things I wanted to sort of just dwell on just for a moment, some learning points here. Firstly, you're a great example here of the fact that life happens for you in a lot of cases rather than to you. It's a nice way to think about it. You know, if you think about, you know, some people, it'd be pretty devastating. Their dad suddenly wasn't their dad, as you put it, you know, although obviously he still is.
Yes.
But, you know, there's that sort of bit of shocking news. There's getting ill, you know, in your school life. And then there's your parents sort of deciding to uproot you and send you back to another country. All of these things, people would maybe regard that as real showstoppers and stop them fulfilling their potential. But for you, they sort of come together to actually propel you forward. And you had this love of aviation, you now have this camera, and then you get back in the UK. And the other thing I wanted to point out is that you had been prepared to take a couple of jobs that had nothing to do with your interest, one in the spa supermarket and one in McDonald's. But rather than just them giving you money, they did give you skills that enabled you to get that first job.
Absolutely.
At British Midland. You were saying that they gave you the ability to answer questions in your interview with British Midland that you wouldn't have been able to have answered.
Yes, correct. If I remember back to my interviews, you know, it was questions like, when have you delivered good customer service? When have you been part of a team? When have you gone the extra mile? You know, there was all these sort of questions that came through. And to be honest with you, if I hadn't worked for, say, McDonald's, I don't know how I would have answered them, because McDonald's gave me such great customer service experience that I was able to answer and get the job at British Mint. So it all
just shows you it's so worth taking these jobs.
Absolutely.
And then when we come on to the, you know, your first job at British Midland, and you did actually go on to work for 18 years as crew, including a long stint at British Airways
which
is the pinnacle, really.
Absolutely.
A lot of people would regard it.
The day that A4 envelope dropped through my door that said I'd got into British, because they hadn't recruited for years.
Yeah.
Because BA was one of those things, once you're in, that's it. You know, people don't leave. It's such a great contract. And when that A4 envelope dropped through my door, I can't even begin to describe the feeling.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, it's a sort of combination of so much work and persistence. And as you, again, rightly pointed out, you know, you got your foot in the door of British Midland, but it wasn't sort of plain sailing to move departments.
No, you had to work hard.
But I think, you know, people can draw on your experience there and say you get what you want in the end. Sometimes you just have to persist and work hard.
Absolutely.
And keep on at it.
Absolutely.
So I'd love to talk to you actually again in a separate interview about cabin crew, because for 18 years working in British Midlands and British Airways, I'm sure you've got some fantastic stories.
Indeed.
To tell us, and some great advice. But we are going to talk about photography, as we know. So tell us how you then moved from being this very experienced cabin crew member to where you are now, which is really at the pinnacle of your career as a very well-known photographer in your particular niche?
As you've already heard, obviously, I've always had a camera to hand. I've always been a hobbyist. And it was probably about 11, 12 years ago, I attended a friend's wedding. You know, I was on the shoulder of the professional, being the annoying hobbyist. And luckily I did. I saved his wedding. And that's where I had a comment from my wife that said, "Oh, I didn't realise you were this great at photography. You know, I can't believe you're not a photographer." Mm-hmm. And, you know, I naturally assumed, well, you know, that's my wife. She's going to say stuff like that. And then she turned around and said to me, you know, it's never too late, you know, to change careers. If you really love it and you want to make a go of it.
What a lovely thing to say.
Absolutely.
And that is very true, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, so then what happened?
So I decided, yes, okay, I will try. So I started photographing weddings and family portraits, and it was a complete self-learning lesson. It was, you know, teach myself. I had the basic understanding. It was now teaching myself that more of that professional look and feel to the images, and understanding light and camera settings even deeper and further. Mm. And obviously, I actually put myself on eBay free of charge, and I took on about 10 weddings. And that's actually how I started.
You offered it for free, first of all?
Absolutely, offered it for free. It was a lot of people that that couldn't afford a wedding photographer. A lot of the weddings were budget. Not the type of weddings you want to show in a portfolio, but it gave me experience. Mm. And one of the weddings was superb, and that's the wedding that launched my wedding career, so to speak.
And you were able to then put that on social media?
I could create a wedding album. I could go and pitch to my next client with that wedding album.
Yeah.
And that's essentially how you're going to get more clients. Yeah.
Such a great way of entering into an industry is to actually do the first bit for free, and then you've got something to show.
Yeah, you have to demonstrate a portfolio.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to demonstrate something to captivate people's hearts.
And then how did you make that transition to the niche that you're in now?
So I've always had a love for physiology, anatomy, and obviously when I did lose all that weight back in my teenage years and became active, I continued my active career in the UK, mainly just going to the gym.
Yeah.
So all my circle of friends were bodybuilders, and it just happens that one of them asked me to photograph for them, and I did, and then it just kind of had a knock-on effect. The phone started ringing, you know, once he'd used the pictures. I literally had a call from somebody else, then somebody else, and I started going to bodybuilding events, bodybuilding shows, etc., and just kind of making more of a name for myself.
Mm.
And that's where I found my love for the physique photography more so than the weddings.
Mm.
Weddings and family portraits was more about chasing the money. If I wanted to chase the money, I could have just stayed at BA. You know,
yeah.
I had a great contract with them, but for me, it was always about the love of the photography.
Mm. And if, you know, other people were in your footsteps, but for example, they were very interested in architecture or horse riding or whatever, then they could follow suit, couldn't they? And rather than going to bodybuilder events and things like
that,
they would go to the events in their particular industry. So there's so many different niches as a photographer that you could follow.
There are hundreds of different niches, you know. And I always say it's great to be a jack of all trades, but definitely try and become a master in your craft.
Yeah.
You know, there are certain names out there when you look at cars, architecture, food, you know, that have made it to the top of their game. And, you know, if you can do that, the diary is going to fill up.
Absolutely. So on that note, your diary is very full, as I know myself, when I book you months in advance. So tell us a bit about, you know, your business now, how you run it, and sort of how you spend your time.
Okay, so I'm self-employed. I'm technically a one-man band. So I generally put my bookings in during the day when my kids are at school. My family balance to my life is very, very important. And that is one major sort of swaying reason why I decided to leave crew. As you can imagine, my wife is also crew, you know, flying around the world. You know, you could be away for several days at a time. So for me, it's now balancing that time. So shoots during the day. I'm around in the afternoon for the kids, and then I tend to go back to work in the evening, probably about 9 o'clock at night, and that's where I do all my emails and my admin. You probably got a few emails off me at night.
Yes, yeah. So you're doing sort of how many hours of photography in a week?
Probably 30, could be 40. You know, I'll book in maybe up to 6 hours of photography a day, you know, after a bodybuilding show or a fitness show. You know, I could be in the studio 12, 16 hours.
You
know,
and you have your own studio as well?
I have my own studio, yes. That's a really important part. If you know, once you build your business up, I've gone from a bedroom studio to a small studio to now a 1500 square foot studio.
And what about editing and admin and all of that? You do all of that?
So I sub my editing out. I have an editor on board with me. He's freelance, but he pretty much only edits for me because of the amount of images I now put through him. So for me, I had a kind of a fork where I needed to expand the business, and there's only kind of two ways you can expand. You've either got to take another photographer on, or you've got to get rid of a part of the business that's taken up a lot of time. And for me, the editing was taking up a lot of time. I'm self-taught. I'm not a fully trained retoucher. So I thought, if I get a fully trained retoucher on board, they'll probably edit in half my time. So therefore, they're editing more than what I can edit.
And it means that you can do the stuff that you really love.
Yeah. So I increase the volume of the shoots, and obviously he does then all the editing, but I still take control of all my administration. So, and that's done generally in the evenings when the kids are in bed.
Yeah. And you say, you know, you've got the lovely flexibility with this, but also you were talking about other things that you love about this job.
For me, obviously, I'm now a creative, so for me it's all about being creative. You know, there's no limits when you work for somebody else, or you work in a job where everything's corporate, you've got to do it the corporate way. As a photographer, you're the creative, so working with different lights, you know, working with effects, etc., that is the part that I love. And I love, you know, challenging myself to be better, create something different, create something new.
You can actually earn really good money as a photographer as well.
You can.
Yeah.
You can indeed. Again, you know, obviously it's all down to how hard you want to work, the niche you work in. But yeah, I would say, you know, easily you could aim for 60, 70, 80,000 a year. Mm. There's absolutely no reason why not.
And if you're prepared to sort of go more the paparazzi route and work with celebrities, I mean, it's a different type of role, but you could even couldn't you?
You could be paparazzi, or you could be a press photographer where you might capture a royal and you might get front page of a newspaper, you know, and you're going to end up with thousands. You could do an advertising campaign and get a billboard, you know, and again, you know, 20,000. Some really sort of high profile photographers, I mean, they're literally blank checks.
Yeah.
I know I spoke to a photographer who photographed the next catalogue. He spends 3 months in Bahamas photographing their summer range. You know, you think of that, it's
lovely,
unbelievable.
So there is definitely opportunities to travel. You can work inside studios, you can work, like, as I know you have, outside on beaches and things like that. So lots of opportunities really for it to be very flexible around your personal life.
Again, it just depends what niche you choose.
For people listening who are inspired, what would you suggest to them to follow in your footsteps? So those people that are maybe still at school, or even those that have a job already and they just want to make a transition.
Okay, so the first thing obviously is, if funds permit, obviously try and invest in some really great equipment. You know, if funds don't permit, then again, you know, buy an entry level SLR camera. Doesn't have to be brand new. You have places like eBay, you have Facebook groups where they're selling secondhand stuff, even camera exchanges. You know, there's a London Camera Exchange, and start practicing, start teaching. You have the internet, you have YouTube. There is a whole encyclopedia of knowledge out there that you can start teaching yourself the basics. There are courses, but my advice would be just to somebody who's potentially not in school would be, you know, use the internet. The info is there. If you're in school, then obviously enrol in your sixth form photography course, your college course, and a lot of them provide really good cameras and really good lenses for you to go off and do projects with.
And you can also do apprenticeships in photography now.
Yes, you can.
And if you do, that means you have an employer, and the employer actually would be prepared to buy you some camera equipment. I mean, you know, myself, I've got two people that are doing related apprenticeships, and so we bought them, not the most expensive by any
fantastic
means, but some camera equipment, and then that really helps the employer as well.
Absolutely.
And then how would they sort of progress in terms of experience, would you say?
So the main thing then is once you obviously you have the camera and you have the passion, it's then obviously you're learning all your fundamental basics. You know, photography is about light, so you're learning about light, and you're beginning your portfolio. And what I mean by portfolio now is, you know, your website, you're building your shop front. Again, you know, this can be so cost effective. You know, you have companies like, I think, Wix, where you can design a free website. You know, it doesn't have to be expensive. This can all be stepping stones for you to building that business. You can get a fancy site built, you know, another day. But the main thing is getting that portfolio together, your social media channels, helping to get you and your business noticed.
And like you say, you know, you can do work for people for free.
Yes.
And pull this portfolio together, get it out there for free on your social media channels.
Contact studios in London, contact photographers, see if you can shadow them, see if you can just go and have a watch. Even if you learn things like how are they directing models, you know, what light shapers are they using on their lights? I did it. There was a company called Model Mayhem online. You know, again, sign up for free. And I remember I put a post up saying, any photographers willing to allow me to come and just watch a shoot? You know, I want to get involved in the studio. And somebody replied and said, come and watch my shoot, Matt. And I got more than just watch. He allowed me to set up lights. He allowed me to change the light shapers. And when he wasn't busy, I even got to ask some, you know, some questions.
Wanted to end up with something that is going to be of interest to all of us vain people, and that is tips on some great selfies. Tell us about that. How can we all look better?
Right, so the biggest issue I see with selfies is people don't use light. Okay, so and this is my challenge to everybody out there. Okay, take a picture with the window in front of you and then the window behind you. Okay, now when the camera is facing the window, your camera phone or even any camera is going to it's going to expose for the bright light that is coming in the window. So therefore, you are going to be in shadow. Turn around and you have all that creamy window light falling onto you. So you're going to look absolutely stunning. And window light, natural daylight, is the softest form of light you can get, providing there's no sunlight in it. It's gonna look, make you look airbrushed.
Right.
You know, it really, so just do that and you look at the difference. And then from that moment on, you're always gonna make sure that you're in the light when you take a selfie.
And what about if you are under electric lights, if it's nighttime and you're all out on a nightclub or something?
Again, you know, look for where the light is, you know. So obviously if you're gonna stand under a down light, it's going to make you look a little bit more spooky, you know, a bit more, because it's going to have harsh shadows in the eyes, under the chin. And likewise, if you're at a concert and there's light coming up, it's like that effect where you're shining a torch. So again, just look for the available light. It will, if you hold the phone up quite high, you're going to make yourself look short. If you hold the phone lower, you're going to make yourself look taller. Taller generally will mean slimmer.
Great. Yeah. Well, there's some great tips for everybody. And none of you, please don't pretend that you don't care about that stuff, because I know you all do. Matt, thank you so much.
You're
it's
so
really
welcome.
Been very, very inspiring. Your work is amazing. If people want to ask you more questions and also to see your work, where's the best place they could go?
My website is mattmarshphotography.co.uk. But if anybody does want to contact me, best place to get me is via email. I generally clear my inbox every single night. Apart from that, obviously, my social channels on Instagram, Matt_Marsh.
Okay, thank you very much. And I think when people go there, they're going to be super impressed. Wishing you all the best in your career. I'm sure that you've got lots more of successes ahead of you. Thank you so much. It's been a really, really great interview. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast and found it useful, you can get more of the same, no matter where you are in your career. If you're looking for your first job, there's my book, How to Get Your First Job and Build the Career You Want, available on Amazon. Or if you prefer face-to-face, my company Middleton Murray provides courses to prep you for your new career and then place you into a job. Alternatively, if you prefer online, try my online program, Your Body Means Business, which is more holistic and provides a complete blueprint on how to advance your career, whether you're employed or running your own business, by upgrading your physical and mental fitness and following a complete business blueprint guaranteed for success. That program, I think, is my best yet. So in summary, no matter where you are in your career, starting out, starting again, or just wanting more, we can help. Follow me on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest, where I post daily at Angela Middleton. And subscribe to this channel, as well as my Limitless vlog on YouTube, where you'll see weekly vlogs full of hints and tips for enhanced careers performance. And share this with your friends as well, if you think it will help them. Thanks so much for listening.